Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. Man, week five, it has come very quickly. But here we are. The Titans are 2-4, coming off a frustrating 27-24 loss to the Jets. We'll get into that. We got Michael DiRocco, ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter, coming on. And as always, Run TMC with Forever Titans receiver Chris Sanders. This is what we have for you. Shout out Elijah Campbell making this thing happen. And I guess, you know what, right from the start, let's get right into it, man. This loss against the Jets, man, there's so much to unwrap, so we won't get into all of it or else the show will be 2 hours long. However, this was a game of first for the Jets. I mean, ultimately, they got their first win this season.
First lead?
Their first win under Robert Saleh this season. They got their first rushing touchdown this season. They got their first lead this season in the third quarter, 10-9. There were a lot of firsts in this game, and at the end of the day, if you're a team that is expected to contend, you don't go out and lose this type of game. So what went wrong? Well, for me, first things first, I think we have to look at the red zone issues, and that's early in the game. This team got into the red zone 3 times, came away with 9 points. That's just unacceptable. And they really had an opportunity to put things away because Christian Fulton delivered an opportunity by getting that pick early in the game, and they came away with 3 points. Bad snap. That messed things up. 2 sacks allowed on third down in the red zone. Things just are not clicking there, and there's a lot that has to be done. In fact, let's look at this, right? Since 2019, week 6, the Titans' red zone offense has scored a touchdown on 75% of their trips inside the 20. This season, they've scored on 50% of their trips into the red zone. That's a 25. I mean, I'm no math major, but that's a 25% decrease. You're not going to consistently win like that. You have to find a way to score the ball in the red zone. This, in my mind, kind of underlines not having Jonnu Smith, because he had 8 touchdowns in the red zone. I think this definitely shows the importance of Arthur Smith, because he had a lot of really good play design and play calling there. But what does this also show? Ryan Tannehill's completion percentage has gone down in the red zone as well. And I will pull up the numbers in a moment, because I took note of this. I actually wrote about this on ESPN.com. It posted on Tuesday. But let's take a look at Tannehill's numbers specifically, where they dropped. Here we are, right down here. Give me 1 second. So in 2019, his completion percentage in the red zone was 70.3%. Last season, it was 63.2, which is still solid. So far this season, it's 56.5. Is it all on Ryan Tannehill? No way. It's not all on him. Receivers aren't getting open. They had opportunities to make some plays, and they didn't. Todd Downing, very good play design for the Cam Batson touchdown. All the focus was on Henry. You sneak Batson across the formation in motion. He releases to the speed out. Wide open, boom, touchdown. You need more plays like that. And that's what Arthur Smith did. A lot of deception, a lot of just awkward personnel packages. These are the type of things that they need to do more of. I'm not going to let the offensive line get off the hook either, because these guys have to step their play up as well. So it's a collective thing. First things first for that offense, because they're moving the football. They're moving it. You just have to score the ball better in the end zone. I'm not talking about 3 points. I'm talking about 7. you need to come away with a touchdown. So that has to get better. Going against the Jets, you had 7 sacks total allowed, 17 on the year. Again, it's a collection of things, not just the offensive line. Not just the line. It's receivers have to get open quicker. Ty Downing has to utilize more plays, allowing them to get open. That's exactly why I went to that bunch formation play for Whiteboard Wednesday, because it's all about putting your guys in situations where they can win. And that's an example of that. The bunch formations, 0 splits, you get guys open right away. So that really has to get better. Again, offensive line has to get better. You're seeing stunts that aren't being picked up, twists and games up front that are allowing pressure. It's too much. So they have to get that together. So offensively, I mean, yeah, they scored 25 points, but they left, or 24 points, but they left a lot on the board. They left a lot off the board, man, and that's something that can't happen. When you're going against a team like the Jets that have been facing a 46-3 deficit collectively over the first half, you get a chance to step on their neck. You have to not only step, you stomp on it. Like, you really put that game away early. But those 9 points resulting from the red zone, I mean, that was a victory for the Jets. And that actually allowed them to stay in the game. And then you saw the defense, man. We'll get into that in a second. But, like, the Jets' defense held the Titans to 9 points in 3 early red zone visits. And that just that's just beyond – that's ridiculous. You can't have that. Now, granted, the Jets' red zone defense entering that week was number 1 in the league. They were tied with the Saints and Broncos, allowing touchdowns on 33% of the trips into the red zone. But you just have to put a team away when you have the opportunity. And the way you talk about complementary football, right, that's what the Titans always talk about. But that's what the Jets did. They played complementary football. The offense struggled the first couple series. It's okay. The defense kept them in it, bend but don't break. And then finally, the offense came around, and it was, you know, that drive where Zach Wilson was able to connect with Corey Davis on a couple plays, and you just saw even in the stadium, like, the whole vibe changed. Everybody was ready to quit on this Jets team. Everybody, even Fireman Ed, they all were ready to quit on the Jets team. All the Titans had to do was get a touchdown in at least one of those first 3 visits. It didn't happen. You get a score, and now it's 9-7, and the Jets fans are in the game. The coaches are in the game. The players, everybody had a different pep in their step, and you saw what ended up happening. One of the things that continue to happen on defense, though, is the chunk plays being allowed, right? You have the Titans are actually tied with the Chiefs for the worst, the most amount of plays of 40 yards or more allowed in the passing game. Both teams have 5. Now, look at Corey Davis's touchdown, right? How many times have we talked about the importance of finishing the job, right? Getting home on the quarterback. Zach Wilson was able to elude pressure, avoid it, and there was one time where he rolled to his right. He pointed because the safety had to come down on the route underneath. He pointed. Corey Davis turned the route up, and he delivered an absolute dime to Davis for a touchdown. Breon Borders and Jack Rabbit Jenkins were, you know, around the play. Borders, I thought, he was in position, but Davis just made a tremendous catch, and that was the touchdown to make it 24 to 17. You know, you look at the other time, they were just able to get Corey Davis the football down the field. You look at the time where they caught Jack Rabbit Jenkins before he could get in position. That was a big play down the field on 3rd and 2. It was a corner route by, I believe it was Keelan Cole. That is the type of thing that can't happen. You look at when he scrambled to his right going the opposite direction, to his right earlier in the game, and he hit, I think that was Cole again, on another throw down the field where it shouldn't have happened. The bottom line, when you're going against these type of quarterbacks, you got to plaster. They're going to face a similar guy this week in Trevor Lawrence. So plaster, playing till the route is finished or the play itself is finished. is definitely important. You have to keep your guy from getting behind you. And that's something that Kevin Byard said when I asked him about, you know, allowing these big plays. You know, he said that you have to keep everything in front of you. You have to play from top to the bottom. That's not something that had been happening. And this defense, you know, they really need to figure it out. One thing that was good, at least for most of the game, is they were able to do well on third downs. Initially, it was only 30% third downs they had allowed, but it got worse towards the end of the game, and it ended up skewing the numbers a bit. End of the day, right, losing to an 0-3 team, you can't have that if you want to be a contender. This team ended up allowing – I mean, they played down to the competition. I think that's really the bottom line. They played down to the level of competition. And I know they hate to hear that, you know, when we ask them about that in press conferences and things like that. But that's what happened. And, yeah, granted, every team in the NFL has good players. But there are some teams that have more good players than others. The Titans are supposed to be one of those teams with more good players than others. I get it. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones weren't available. But still, they should have won this football game. They didn't. So now what's left? Well, fortunately for the Titans, you don't really have to cancel Christmas as of yet, because as you go around the rest of the division, and I wrote about this, you know, there's some pretty bad situations. And we'll get into one of those bad situations with Michael DiRocco when we talk about this week's matchup against the Jaguars. But you have the Texans situation with Deshaun Watson and just, you know, Davis Mills and his terrible performance. And then you got the Colts with the injuries, you know. Ankle sprains are a bad thing, a prevalent thing in Indianapolis, with Quentin Nelson having it and Carson Wentz having two of them. So it's still not that bad for the Titans. Granted, this loss was terrible. The Cardinals' loss was terrible. But it's still not that bad. They could get back on track with a win this week. They're going to need to win convincingly. This is a game where you have to go out and reestablish yourself. I feel this is somewhat of a GPS game for them, because this will show you where they are, how badly they go out and beat the Jaguars. We'll see what happens, but I personally think that they need to go out there and run that score up, run it up, you know, completely shut things down. The Jaguars, because if they lose this game, now you will have lost to back-to-back 0-4 teams. AFC South becomes complete. It's wide open now, but it just the top comes off of it. It's completely wide open. This team should still win the division. It's not about just winning a division, right? Because you, the fans, want to see them advance even further. I want to keep working, so I want to see them advance further also, right? I don't want my schedule to cancel in the first week of January. So, hey, I'm in the same boat with you guys. So definitely want to see this ship just get turned around. It's not the end of the world. The sky isn't completely falling. Let's see how things continue to work out. So I think it's only right we get into the next segment, you know, talk a little shop with Run TMC with Chris Anderson. We're going to do that. Go ahead and pay these bills first, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guy. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah, you know what we are. For you, Guitars. Yeah. Back from the break, talking with TD. You know what that music means. It's time for Run TMC. Uh-oh. Let's turn this music down. Dim the lights. And now, starting at center for your Boston Celtics, number 00, Robert Parrish.
Oh, you still... The Chief. Man, why you going to steal my thing, man?
Hey, man, swiping no swiping. Not today.
And now, playing in the best sitcom, The Jeffersons, as his son, Lionel Jefferson.
Oh, man, that's a dog.
Can I hang up? Man, what's up, dude? How we doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. You know, my check's still cash, win, lose, or draw. I'm happy about that.
Are you still happy about what happened last week to these Titans, baby?
Hey, man, you know, I like to write about W, so it wasn't the best situation.
They're going to be all right.
We got to do what we got to do. I'm getting all choked up again, man.
You sad again, man.
I'm like,
AJ Brown to come back or Julio to come back?
Something, man. Don't mess around. Have me swinging at punching the air like Trey and Boys in the Hood. Well, let's get into it, man. You know. All right, man. All jokes aside, look at that. We got a couple things to hit on. A couple things to hit on. So when you look at this offensive line, you look at this team, right, going back and watching that game, seven sacks allowed. 17 sacks allowed this season, which is an NFL high. Oof. What do you make of it?
You know, I think sometimes we just look at the offensive line and say they're struggling, they're no good. There's so many things that are compounding to what we're looking at. First of all, let's start with the quarterback. I think sometimes, and this is no disrespect because I love the players, but I think that the quarterback sometimes is holding the ball too long. That's number one. And then number two, we go with the offensive line. You know, yeah, they're getting beat on some different techniques, and they're not allowing, you know, Tannehill to step up and throw the ball because the pocket is collapsing. And then number three, you got to put it on the receivers. Sometimes the receivers are not getting open. They're not creating separation. And also, you talk about side adjust. When we talk about side adjust, that means if somebody's blitzing, if they have a delayed blitz, and instead of running a comeback, you run a slant because it's got to be a quicker thing. So it goes all over the board. It's not just, okay, the offensive line's struggling. Yeah, they're struggling. They're communicating, but it's three phases of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the side adjustment because that's something, you know, you replace where the blitz left. And, you know, you got to be on the same page there. I'm going to add something else to that, too, because one of the sacks that we saw – it was the Colts game. You know, Okereke, number 58, he had that delayed blitz. Yep. And Jeremy McNichols, a guy who was known for his pass pro ability, he didn't come across, you know, read inside out and go and block him, and that resulted in a sack too. So you're just seeing failures on multiple levels. But the thing that I want to get into, because this is what Mike Vrabel had pointed to as one of the things after the game, you know, when he was asked about the sacks and the struggles, he had mentioned guys not getting open. So let's get into that because that's something that we really need to talk about. I know your perspective is unique, having been there and done that on the pro level. So for you as a receiver, you know, watching that game, what did you come away with, you know, in regards to these guys' struggles to get open?
You know, I think what it is I think they're struggling with the press, but also I think they're struggling with locating where the blitzes come from. And I'm going to give you a situation what I'm talking about. In 1999, we're playing the Atlanta Falcons, and we're looking at film, and Stephen there kept saying, okay, if this guy blitz, I want you to run a slant, even if he's pressed. So we were on the same page. So when we saw the safety start creeping up, Stephen there automatically gave me a glance like, here we go. Mm-hmm. So I ran a slant, I caught the ball, and I ran for a 46-yard touchdown. I don't think the receivers, Reynolds and Batts and Westbrook, they're all on the same page because it's like if you watch really closely, Tannehill's holding the ball long like, man, come on, I need you to get open. I need you to do something. I just think that they're not just on the same page, and that's why we're seeing sacks. That's why we're seeing miscommunication, and that's why we're not seeing the ball thrown down the field because I don't think that the quarterback and those receivers are on the same page yet.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that because there were a couple shots that they did take down the field, but unfortunately, Josh Reynolds wasn't able to pull it away. The first one was a corner end zone shot. He ran the fade, and he wasn't able to secure it through contact with the ground. Then the other one was the post, and I don't know if the way he landed on his knee made him drop it or, you know, the DB kind of swinging in front of there. But those are two examples where I think a better play being made could help your quarterback. But then you have the other examples of Josh Reynolds coming through on third downs, right? And we talk about guys not getting separation or getting open quickly. especially, you know, when you have this offensive line that you got to hold things down a little bit, you know, to give time. But when it's not happening, you have to kind of convert things and start to use better plays. And that's where you saw a bunch formation. So I want you to just get into a little bit about the bunch formation, the zero splits, and how that creates separation and how that could help these receivers.
Oh, absolutely. When you're in a bunch formation, when you're in a 3-by-1 or just in a 3-wide receiver set, number one, if they're playing man-to-man, that's a man-beater. I mean, you got to run routes and have man-beaters. When I say the number one receiver, that's the first outside, the number two is in the middle, the number three is closest to the tackle or the tight end. So the kind of the route you want to run is the number three guy, you want him to run a slant, okay, just to get him out there, just to open up for the second guy to run maybe like a wheel route or to run like a post route, get him out of there. And then now you have the number one wide receiver basically has all that room. He can run a deep post, keep it skinny, or he can run an out route because it creates some room. So now when you're in that 3-by-1, and it doesn't allow those defensive backs to press you. So if the receivers are struggling with the press, then now with the bunch formation, it allows them to run routes but also create separation.
Excellent point. And that's actually what I drew up this week for Whiteboard Wednesday.
Oh, we're on the same page then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I pulled one of the plays they used on third down, and it was literally almost verbatim what you said, right? Number three ran a slant, which was Westbrook Ikhine. He was originally on the opposite side. He motioned over to number three, and he ran a slant. Then you had Chester Rogers. I always do that, Charles Rogers, man. Rest in peace, the former Lions, Michigan State receiver. Chester Rogers was the point man, and you know he was able to avoid getting jammed, and he released outside and then brought it back inside.
Yep.
And then Josh Reynolds was number one, and with all that space, it was just an easy slant route, caught it, 3rd and 5, he got 9 yards, and it was a first down. So that's exactly what they need to do more of, especially if they don't have A.J. Brown or Julio Jones this week.
And also, too, this is what we got to understand, too. When you come out the huddle, you got to understand what down it is. Yeah. If it's third down, they're bringing heat.
Yep.
So what you have to do as a receiver is say, okay, the reason why they're pressing us is because they're thinking you're running a short route. They got to figure out a way to have maybe some max protection and allow Tannehill to maybe, you know, do a 5-step drop and maybe get one of those receivers wide open, do like a little rub route, and maybe have number two do a wheel, out and up, call a wheel. And I think that'll definitely really help those receivers to get open, because if you look at, man, there was no separation. Those guys were right there. And some of the balls that the receivers caught was only in zone.
Yeah, that's definitely a fact, and that's something to watch. One of the other things that came up this week, you know, it's Jaguars week, so we have to take a look at this dumpster fire that they got going on down there. I'll say this, and I'm going to talk to Mike DiRocco about that, Jaguars ESPN NFL Nation reporter, but I want to get your perspective, right? Now, you have a head coach, you know, mind you, this team, they just went 0-4, a debacle, you know, 21-0 lead in the end of the first half, and they end up losing that lead in the third quarter. 0-4, he doesn't fly home with the team. He stays behind. Now that's just something I don't know. I played for college. I didn't go to the league, but, I mean, in my time, I never had a head coach not leave with us.
Right.
What's your perspective on that?
I agree with you 100%. I think if we're a team and we're following our leader, then he needs to lead by example by staying on a plane and going home with the team. Because just imagine if I'm playing wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'll say, hey, coach, why y'all go and have meetings? Can I chill here? I mean, that's not going to fly with all your other players. But here's the deal. This is what I'm going to do. If I have a coach that's going through this way, I know he's going through a lot of, you know, going through a lot of stuff off the field. That's him. But as the leader of the Jaguars, as a leader of that organization, as a leader that's in that locker room, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to gather the team up together and say, you know what, we understand what our head coaches are going on, but let's take ownership of this team. How do I take ownership of the team? By running the correct route, by playing with enthusiasm, by listening to the quarterback, by blocking, by doing everything that I need to do to help my fellow player. Because we always talk about this, hey, I love my brother, I love this, but this is the time where you got to love your brother when it is a absolute mess. Yes, we understand that the head coach is going through the stuff. We respect that, and you know everybody makes a mistake. That's great. But at the end of the day, the head coach doesn't play for the players. The players play for each other. So what the Jacksonville Jaguars need to do is say, you know what? I'm depending on you, right guard. I'm depending on you, wide receiver. I'm depending on you, quarterback. I'm depending on you, Miles Jack. I'm depending on you, Griffin. I'm depending on you. And when you have guys like that, that can be a team that can turn this thing around in spite of what the head coach is going through.
Right. So within that locker room, though, do you think that that locker room, I would imagine, regardless, is in danger of being lost? You're 0-4, mm-hmm. and your coach yeah. just, I don't know, he just, but now you add that to it.
Yeah.
Do you think that locker room is in danger of, like, is it on the brink of being just, hey, look, man, it's a wild, wild west?
I mean, it all depends on what leadership is. If leadership is about themselves, the leaders of the team like Miles Jack and Griffin and all those guys that are leaders of that defense, and then you have your quarterback with Trevor Lawrence, if you're a good leader, a leader says, you know what, we're going through adversity, we're going through trials and tribulations, but let's keep it close in this locker room. That's what a real leader does. A leader takes a mess and turns it into a message. That's what a leader does. And it's not always going to be good. It's not going to be rosy. When the times are tough, you say, you know what? I'm going to rise, and I want you to rise with me, with my teammates. And that's how you overcome all this mess.
So if you had to stand up in front of the team and talk to, like, what would you say in the midst of all that?
You know what I would do? I would say, hey, guys, this is a prime opportunity to turn a mess into a message. This is what I would say. I would look at my quarterback and say, dude, I need you. I understand that our head coach is going through stuff. I need you. I trust you. This is why we bleed on the offseason. This is why we run the routes. This is why we come in two-a-days. This is why we do all the things to get to where we need to get. Yeah, we're 0-4. Yeah, our head coach is going through some trials and tribulations. But here's the deal. We got two choices, to get better or get bitter. What's your choice? And the guys that are in the corner are going to fight for you, but the guys that are being selfish are going to do their own thing. And I point the finger at myself and say, you know what? It starts with me, but I need you guys to follow me.
All right, so
woo!
All of these things at hand, 0-4 Jaguars, 2-2 Titans, coming off an 0-3, lost to an 0-3 team. Did you know that the Jets scored more points in that game than they had all year?
But you know, just not to labor on this, but I want to tell you when the momentum changed, and this is where Zach Wilson got confidence. It was 3rd and 10, and before that he was struggling. I mean, he's throwing the ball everywhere. But when he threw the ball to Corey Davis on the out route and he got a first down,
Yep. Watch
his body language going back to the huddle. He was like, Yep. Whoa, I can do this. I said, uh-oh. That's exactly what I screamed. He's got it. And that's exactly when he turned it around.
And then he came back and had another completion to him.
Absolutely.
On the opposite side. It was just too easy. That's the thing. And we go over this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You give that free release. And you let a guy just run it. I mean, that was routes on air, essentially.
Dude, that was 7-on-7.
Worse than that, man.
It was 15 yards off.
And they had it again later in the game.
When they missed it.
Yeah, but they missed it. You know, so it's just like, how many times is the same thing going to continue to happen? And this is an issue that just continues to rear its ugly head with this second. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that they don't trust Jack Rabbit? Do they trust Fulton? Do they? Because if they trust you, they'll be in his mustache.
Well, you saw how Fulton was able to play it earlier, you know, the in-breaking route, you know. And then there was another one where if that ball didn't get tipped, he picks that off, and he's probably, you know, a pick six.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they trust Fulton. I don't know what the deal with Jenkins is as far as their trust level. Now, I've talked to Elijah Molden. I talked to Fulton. They said, without saying, that they have the liberty to kind of change if they want to come up and press, you know, according to the way the play call
is. Whoa. Did you say they got the liberty?
That's the way I phrased it. I said, you guys have the liberty to come up and press. You know.
They said the coach said, my bad.
No.
Hey, you can press if you want. Go ahead.
But see, that's the thing. Like, they kind of, without saying they do, they said it. You know, he was like Molden said, you know, down a distance, if we want to come up and challenge a little bit more where at times we can. You know, so I don't know. I don't know who to, like, I don't know if this is something that's being coached. I don't know, man.
As a defensive back, you know, on third down, the Titans are bringing heat. You got to know where the sticks are at.
Right.
He's got to get rid of the ball quick.
Put your heels on that yard line.
Absolutely. It's 3rd and 10, and you in the end zone.
It's tough. And not all of it is against Bunch. You know, there are some times against Bunch where they're backing up, but not all of it is against Bunch.
But that's different, though, because it's in a condensed formation.
Right, so you have to back up a bit. But that's not every time.
But it's 3rd and 10, and you're on a perimeter, and you're in the end zone.
Yeah, I can't call that one. So
I'm just kidding.
Oh, what do you think? You got Marvin Jones, DJ Shark is going to be out, but what do you think of this game? He had a bad injury.
Yeah. I think the Tennessee Titans are going to be fine because I think it's so much a disarray over there. And just like what they did last year when they went against the Jacksonville Jaguars, they came and they challenged the receivers because they didn't respect those receivers. But, you know, this is a team that has nothing to lose, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have nothing to lose. They say, you know what, we got all this stuff going on. We either get better or get bitter. We're going to make some plays and get out of this dumpster fire, or you're going to keep letting this thing continue. So, you know, I know the Tennessee Titans are probably going to go down there and blow them out, but you can't give them jokers any kind of confidence thinking that they can win. Because you remember, every time the Tennessee Titans play these guys, they're always getting embarrassed. We always had like a 99-yard touchdown or a 56-yard touchdown, so they don't want to get embarrassed. You better believe it's going to be a good game, but I think the Tennessee Titans come out victorious.
There you have it. So that is your prediction from Chris Sanders. He has a Titans win this week. They get back on course, 3-2, and we'll see if all is well in Nashville after this win rolling into Monday night. I can't wait to talk about that one.
Ooh, that's going to be a barber.
Yeah, that's going to be one to talk about. So, hey, man, I appreciate you.
Always, boss.
All right, we'll get back next week.
Okay.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, ODB, as we bring in my guy. He's not an ODB, but he's been around for a little bit, covered the Jaguars for a while. My man, Michael DiRocco, ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter. I guess that music is fitting because in some frame, some schools, they might call Urban Meyer the ODB after these activities that have happened recently. I don't know. I guess we could start there, man. What is your take on all of this? It's different.
That's one way to describe it. It's different. It's one of the more, like, covering this franchise. I've been doing it since 2013. You see a lot of weird and, you know, just inexcusable stuff go on with this franchise over the last decade or so. This tops the cake. I mean, when you sit there and you just think about it and you go, okay, the head coach of a winless team who just said his team was heartbroken after the loss on Thursday night doesn't fly back with the team, instead goes into visit family in Columbus, Ohio, goes to his restaurant on Friday night, his wife stays home to watch the grandkids. And then there's videos that emerge of a woman dancing close to his lap, and then another video that emerges that appears to show him, you know, touching her rear end there. And I'm just, like, I'm flummoxed. There's no other way to describe what's going on down here than flummoxed. It's just, it's ridiculous. It's an amazingly bad lapse in judgment. Urban Meyer called it stupid, which I'm not going to argue there. I'd probably use about 4 or 5 other words to describe it that are a little bit more harsh than stupid. But, I mean, it was just – it's ridiculous is what it is. I mean, a head coach of an NFL team doing all that, and here you are. You're trying to get your first win. You lost 19 consecutive games. One more, and you'll be all by your lonesome self and second place for the longest losing streak in NFL history. It's just – it's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it, and I don't know that anybody else has either.
Well, D-Rock, let me know this. He spoke on Wednesday. What was his demeanor? And I mean, I just don't even understand. Like, why tackle it today? Like, why tackle it? Why not handle it, you know, right from the start of the week so you could kind of put it aside? Like, it's in the middle of the preparation. He's speaking about that. So
this is not exactly PR 101 in how to handle a crisis. Talks on Monday about it. Then another video emerges. Shad Khan issues a public rebuke on Tuesday. And then he apologizes to the full team on Monday, or excuse me, on Wednesday morning, because on Monday he just met with the position groups because he felt like that was a more intimate setting. And he wanted to be in there, you know, he used the term personal space, and I'm like, that's kind of what got you in trouble in the first place.
Invading that.
I mean, it's just, it's lingered for 3 days, and then today he's talking about it again. And, you know, the team should have addressed it all on Monday. Everything should have been done on Monday. Shad Khan should have released a statement on Monday, and then Urban apologizes to everybody on Monday, and then you move on. But this has lingered for 3 days, and it's probably going to linger for another 3 or 4 days. And you know what? Every time they're on TV for the next couple of weeks, people are going to be bringing it up. So, I mean, at least you could have nipped it at the bud here, but it's just, it's ridiculous. Now, his demeanor today, I want to say, was better than it was on Monday for sure. On Monday, it was more, you know, he was, you know, staring down at the podium. He was a little bit, he was morose, which, you know, I guess I understand that a little bit. But, you know, it wasn't, he wasn't as direct, I didn't think, and he wasn't as energetic as he was today. So, you know, he made it a point to try and make more eye contact today than he did on Monday. So I guess from that standpoint is better. But, I mean, if you're the Jags, you just got to hope nothing else comes out. Well, this is going to continue to be a story day after day after day until there's some sort of a resolution, whether that's Urban quitting, the season ending, or him getting fired.
I mean, would anything, like, surprise you at this point?
No, not with this organization.
Unbelievable.
No, not at all. I mean, like, look, this is the same organization, by the way, that fired Gus Bradley after a road game in 2016 in Houston and then had him ride the team charter on the way back to Jacksonville. So nothing this franchise does surprises me anymore, good or bad. I mean, if you told me tomorrow that Urban Meyer was going to walk in and just say, I'm done, and walk away, that wouldn't surprise me a bit. Nothing this franchise does surprises me. Maybe that means I'm jaded. I don't know. But, man, it's been so bad around here that it'd be hard to surprise me with anything.
That's wild. Gus Bradley got fired and had to ride back with the team. Urban Meyer is under contract, a husky one at that, and was able to stay behind. Daggone, man. That's something else. We're talking to Mike DiRocco, ESPN, NFL Nation, Jaguars reporter. So I guess the locker room, what's the vibe in the locker room? I know you're in touch with everything. What's coming out of there?
Well, I mean, Trevor Lawrence spoke today and was very respectful and said, hey, look, you know, I haven't seen any issues of him losing the locker room. And, you know, I still respect him, and he's my head coach. And Josh Allen, defensive end, said the same thing, and that, you know, they're all ready to move on. But, man, you know how it is. You talk to some people inside the organization, players and some coaches and whatever, and like, there's a lot of contempt for him in that locker room. And there are guys that are willing to forgive and forget and move on and still respect them, but then there's guys in that locker room that are like, what in the heck is going on here? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? We're trying to win games, and you're doing this. And you're telling us that we need to be careful and not do stupid stuff when we're out, and you're doing stuff that's even worse. So, I mean, he's got some supporters in that locker room for sure, but there's a lot of guys in there that are just like, what's going to happen next? And I can't believe that my head coach is doing this. So, you know, the locker room's at sort of a tipping point at this, you know, where we are right now. I mean, if they come out on Sunday and they play terribly and they get their rear ends handed to them, no pun intended, you know, it could be bad. I mean, if they can go out and at least play competitive football and be close and have a chance to win at the end, well, then, okay, I mean, maybe that's better, but, man, they just can't get blown out, because then there's a real chance he could lose this locker room by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing that just amazes me, in addition to the whole not traveling back with the team, which, I mean, that's unheard of, man. I can't even wrap my mind around, to use your word, I'm flummoxed about that. Yeah. But I looked that up after you said it, by the way. So, new word to add to the vocabulary. But, yeah, you add that to the fact that, what do coaches always say, right? They say, hey, don't be a distraction to the team. Don't be a reason why we're not talking about being asked about football. And here it is, the face of your franchise is doing that. It's just it's amazing to me. But hey, look, man, there's a football game that has to be played. So let's get into that. Trevor Lawrence talking to some of the Titans. You know, they say, hey, man, this guy is a mobile quarterback. He can escape and get the ball down the field. What have you seen from him at a professional level so far?
Yeah, I mean, look, the kid is the real deal. He's got a massive arm. He's got the confidence to make throws in tight windows, the willingness to take some shots down the field. And, you know, the thing that's impressed me the most about him, to be honest with you, is the way he moves in the pocket, because he steps up effortlessly. A lot of times, you know, TD, young quarterbacks, they get happy feet, they skitter a little bit, you know, they're not really sure what they're doing, and they run themselves into some sacks. I mean, he is really, really good at moving in the pocket, sensing where the pressure is and avoiding it. And, you know, they've mixed in more of the spread option elements over the last couple of weeks. So he ran the ball last week more than he ran it in any other game. And, you know, looked good doing it, too. I mean, he's a better athlete than people give him credit for, but obviously it's all going to depend on that right arm. And, you know, after watching the last couple of years of guys dinking and dunking down the field, it's nice to be able to watch a guy that will take some shots down the field. Now, he's just got to learn how to deal with probably being patient is the most important thing for him, to learn how to, you know, be willing to take some checkdowns. You know, in the first couple of weeks, he was forcing things downfield. He wanted to find a big play, and he kind of passed over some 7-8 yard throws that he could have made that would have at least kept the chains moving, if not, you know, made a short yardage third situation for them, or a short yardage third down situation for them more manageable. And he did a little bit better with that last week, and last week was the first week he hadn't turned it over. So, you know, he's making the steady progression that you really want to see him. And, you know, I do think mentally this kid's people around here joke, it's like, please, God, don't let the Jaguars ruin Trevor Lawrence. And I honestly don't think they can. This kid's mental, you know, his attitude is fantastic. He's unflappable. He's, you know, he doesn't get high, doesn't get low. He's pretty much the same every single day. After every single play, interception or touchdown, I just think he's got the perfect demeanor that you want out of an NFL quarterback. So it's been fun to watch him progress.
What's the wide receiver core like? Because I know with Shark being out, DJ Shark, that definitely makes things a little more difficult. But, hey, Marvin Jones, you talk about vertical, pushing the ball down the field that way. He's one of my favorite guys at doing that. How is this receiving core rounding up?
Yeah, he's been Trevor Lawrence's top target all season, like I thought he would be. I thought that was a really good signing. Give a young quarterback, a veteran receiver, who knows what the heck's going on. I thought that was a really good signing the Jaguars made. You know, with Chark out, they had, I think he had 7 catches, 2 touchdowns in the 3.5 games. But, I mean, they had really not had the chemistry to kind of hook up. I think he was only catching 25% of the targets. You know, so they really had some trouble getting on the same page there. But Chark missed a bunch of time with a broken finger in camp, so that played into it there. Laviska Shenault has been healthy. He stayed healthy. And, you know, he's a guy that they really – he's not a down-the-field guy. He's more of a, you know, a short the short to intermediate throws. They like to give him the ball really quick on a screen, on a wide receiver screen, and let him, you know, bowl over a couple of guys, because he's not a wiggle guy. He's a big, thick, physical runner. You know, but it's after those two, you know, who's it going to be? I mean, Kayvon Austin got a lot of reps last week after DJ Chark went down. But the guy to really watch, I think, is Jamal Agnew, who's the kick returner. He's had 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns already, including the 109-yarder against the Cardinals a couple of weeks ago. He's going to get more work in that number three rotation spot. And, you know, he'll carry the ball a little bit out of the backfield every once in a while, too. So they're going to try and basically use him the way that they wanted to use Travis Etienne before he got hurt. Not to the same volume, but they're going to give him a chance to really kind of make some plays. Because he's a really quick guy. He's a converted DB, too. So he's really young in terms of a receiver. This is only his second full season as a receiver, but he has really good ball skills and he's really elusive. So they're going to try and give him some opportunities to make some plays too, because they got to do something, because just Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault is not going to be enough.
Now, what about the secondary, right? Shaq Griffin was the signing. You got Trey Herndon, Vandy kid. Is Tyson Campbell, like, where does he fall in all of this?
Yeah, he's the other starter outside after they traded C.J. Henderson, and he runs really, really well, and he's got really good coverage skills and no ball skills.
Yep.
He has a really hard time with that, and I don't know that that's something that you can teach a guy. I think you either have good instincts or you don't. You know, and I guess, you know, I waffle back and forth on this. You know, if he's in position to make some plays, but he can't find the ball at times, and it results in a big play for the other or for the offense. And then the question is, well, do you want a guy that is in position to make the plays and he doesn't, but at least the law of averages would bear it out that he'll make a couple of plays here and there? Or would you rather have a guy that's not in position that makes the play, you know, or is never in position to make a play? So, you know, either way, you know, the secondary has given up some big plays, and I think that's a chance that an area of the Titans, if, you know, those guys are healthy, could actually take advantage of this defense.
Yeah, that's a great point. This Titans defense, or offense rather, the offensive line, I'm not going to put it all on the line, just collectively, 17 sacks, which leads the NFL. That's the most by any team in the league that they've given up. Josh Allen, Kalyvon Chasen, you know, you look at these guys. How is that pass rush looking? Is that something where the Titans should be concerned, Titans fans, they should be concerned about what this Jaguars team brings up front?
Not really, to be honest with you, because they've really had trouble rushing the passer. I mean, and they converted to the 3-4, so Allen will drop in coverage a lot too. So he's not really the guy that rushes every single down. But the problem is they haven't been able to get pressure with four. And when they've had to blitz, because Joe Collin, the coordinator, does like to blitz, when they've blitzed, they haven't really gotten home either. So that's, you know, if you're going to blitz, you're going to leave your guys kind of alone back there in the secondary. You better get home, and they haven't. And the bigger issue, too, is that they don't have anybody that they really can put on the other side of Josh Allen that really is somebody that an offense has to game plan against. You know, Allen had a really good rookie year, but he was playing with Calais Campbell and Unique Ngakoue. And now that he's the alpha, you know, teams are able to kind of pick him off, and then they don't have to worry about Kalyvon Chasen or Jihad Ward or anybody like that. They can handle those guys one-on-one. So, you know, I don't expect the Jags to get a ton of pressure this week. But then, again, you know, you mentioned the offensive line has really struggled in Tennessee in terms of giving up pressure, so maybe. But, like, I go into the game thinking, you know, if they get 1-2 sacks, that's a really good game for this group.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they do get 1 or 2 sacks. It looks like A.J. Brown may be returning, so that'll be a tough order for the secondary, and that should help things. But we'll just have to see what happens. Anything other than Urban Meyer that you could tell the listeners you have coming up this week?
It is all Urban Meyer all the time. I am trying to do a story, though, about Dan Arnold, who's the recently acquired tight end, who, you know, the Jaguars traded C.J. Henderson, the number 9 overall pick last year, to the Carolina Panthers, who just, picked up, traded for Stephon Gilmore today, or Wednesday. So we'll see how that goes for them. But, you know, Dan Arnold, they've botched the tight end position here, and it goes beyond just having Tim Tebow in here. They didn't address it in terms of pass catching at all in free agency or the draft. And Arnold joined the team last Monday and then played Thursday night, had two catches for, I want to say, 27 yards. He had one of those catches was a 17-yard catch and run, you know, down the sideline that kind of put him in position to score, I think, their second touchdown. So he's a guy to kind of keep an eye on, because that might be, you know, some place where they can, you know, help. I mean, maybe Arnold can help make up for the loss of DJ Chark for a little bit. But he's had, you know, over a week now to kind of get in here. So it's going to be interesting to see how they use him going forward.
There you have it. Well, D-Rock, I really appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael DiRocco, ESPN NFL Nation, Jaguars reporter. This is what we do each and every week. We roll out the black book and get in there and bring one of my partners in. So I appreciate you, man. I'll be there on Saturday. I'll give you a call if you're available. We could link up and have dinner or something.
Sounds good, bud. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
See ya.
So that was Michael DiRocco, ESPN, NFL Nation, Jaguars reporter. Shout out D-Rock for coming on, giving us some time. Shout out Elijah Campbell, making it happen on the producer side of things. And shout out Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver. Every week, you know what we do, Run TMC. Lastly, shout out to each of you for tuning in. Really appreciate the support. Make sure you check out Whiteboard Wednesday. We have the Chalk Talk review each and every week. This time we got into a little something to solve these sack issues that the Titans have. So make sure you check that out. ESPN.com, Titans page. Check that out as well. Hey, we're all over the place. Once again, appreciate each of you. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.